We came up on a rise, and then took a knife's edge turn away from the river to where the trail, covered with cactus and sagebrush, edged along some of the rocks that Henry and I had been looking at from the road. The two-track path ended in a scrabble field and then slowly climbed into a dry pasture that rolled with the hills. When we got to the top of the nearest one, I could see slight depressions where the road continued north and west and some larger rocks to our right jutting out from the ground beside us like molars, the perfect place to kill someone, if you were so inclined. I looked at the rancher. What now? He cleared his throat and gestured toward the depleted vista. Just keep going that way, toward the mountains. The hills became more pointed as we drove, and the tall, dry grass rolled like waves crashing against the foothills of the Bighorns. Gradually, the road became more apparent, and I could see a ranch gate in the distance, a big one made from rough-hewn 12x12s, with a bent sign chained on the top and sides. There was a brace of structures in a meadow of bottomland below the pale yellow cliffs, which were the same shade as the ranch house, barn, and outbuildings. The stone of the buildings, the shadows of the giant cottonwoods that just had turned dusty gold, and the deeply overhung cedar-shake roofs felt cool even from a distance, and I could feel emotion pulling in my chest as I took it all in. I stopped the truck at the gate. We sat there for a moment, then Bill got out and I opened the door for Dog. The three of us met at the cattle guard, and Bill gestured for me to continue toward the gate, which I did, even though he still held the 30-30. He held the bottle, too, if unsteadily. But I wasn't too afraid of being shot in the back anymore, and reached down and ruffled Dog's ear. Come on, you've jumped these things before. Bill followed us over to the thick rails that made up the pivoting double gate. The hardware was handmade, and I could see all sorts of finishing touches in the forged steel, a talent which was far beyond the abilities of most ranchers. Even the chains that held the sign above us looked handmade. Bill leaned on the top rail with the Winchester lying parallel, his forearms covering the rifle. The fellow that built this place was a blacksmith by trade, but he dabbled in masonry. I propped up an elbow of my own on the worn spot just where you would have gripped to pull the custom latch. I could see that the 4-inch rails were smoothed, where horsemen had sidled against the gate for more than a half century, so that they could open it without dismounting, saving themselves the ignominy of becoming a cowboy afoot. Knew what he was doing. Back to the cliffs, easy access to water, and those beautiful mountains off in the distance. Bill stood there for a moment, breathing in the flavor of the changing wind as it followed the bottomland and climbed the cliffs that surrounded a perfect basin where the homestead was located, and where the air was sweet and heavy with the life-affirming humidity of the river. He had a wife who was probably the prettiest thing in the Powder River country. Musical, too. Played the piano, as I recall. There were a few juniper and some cottonwood trees growing up from the fissures in the rock along the cliff, the volunteers mimicking the shimmer of the big guys by the ranch house. There was an old road that led down to the huddle of buildings, but until you were almost upon it, the place was completely concealed from the outside. You had to know it was here to get here. I turned as Dog circled the perimeter, taking in the smells, and I could feel a little of the moisture collecting in my eyes. Whatever happened to them? Bill stood with his back against the gate, the rifle now propped against the fence, and gestured with his chin for me to join him. He scratched his neck where his protruding Adam's apple strained as he continued to look up at the ranch sign. They had a boy who played ball, offensive tackle for USC, but I don't think he ever amounted to much. The chains that held the sign racked against the eyelet bolts with the wind and then relaxed, the sound like spurs jingling on a hardwood floor. Memories were crowding in on me now, and all I could do was stand there and take the hits like a tackling dummy. He finally lowered his head and took a sip of the rye as I stared at the sky and read the name I knew as well as my own. Because it was my own. The gusts pushed against the wooden plank, but the letters that my father had carved deep into the walls of the ironwood were still highly legible, and read Longmire. Chapter 8. October 28th, 5:40 p.m. I handed the bottle back to him and stood there, still feeling the burn in my throat as I thought about what Henry had said alongside the Red Road, about knowing where we were going. "You remembered my family after all these years, Bill?" He blew out a deep breath that pursed his lips. "Yeah, I heard about Martha getting the cancer, and I know I should have gotten in touch, but I didn't. And after that, it just kept getting harder and harder to work up the nerve." He readjusted, still in search of a comfortable spot for his butt on the top rail, and tossed a small pebble into the roadway that stretched down to my father's house. "I figured I'd see you again," he laughed. "I don't mind telling you, I was getting worried thinking I was going to have to write you a letter from Denver. Hell, I'd rather take a bullet than write a letter." I walked away from the gate toward the edge of the cliff and stared at the reflections on the water as Buffalo Creek twisted its way to the reservoir that I had helped my father build. I stood there on the bluff overlooking the place where I'd grown up, trying to deflect the flood of history and emotion. "After they died, I just stopped coming out this way." "I know." He took another swig of the liquor and gestured toward the tidy ranch house, with the stone archways shading the front porch, and to me with both hands, his voice echoing off the rock face. "Funny how you can have your life someplace and then just pick up one day and walk away." "How long did you know it was me?" He smiled. "I met Eric Boss before, and he wasn't what everybody was describing. I read the newspapers, and you've been in there a lot lately."
"I suppose so."
"Then I got a look at you at the bar last night."
"You were there?"
"Nope. I started to come in, but saw you, and turned around and went home."
"What time?"
He smiled. "You sound like a sheriff now."
I didn't smile. "What time?"
He cleared his throat and spit to the side, wobbled a little, and paused. He looked like he might puke, but he only belched and turned back to me. "About 11:30. It looked like you were having a little scrape with that Cly fella."
"Who else knows who I am?"
He made a face.
"Nobody."
"Nobody?" His eyes stayed steady underneath the brows.
"Nobody that I know of."
I took a deep breath and looked at the homestead and then at the sign again. His eyes narrowed as he watched me, but then widened as he followed my gaze.
"I'll be damned. There aren't that many Longmires around these parts, and I've heard the stories about your grandfather and that fugitive buffalo soldier."
"Did you recognize Henry back there on the road?"
He waited a minute, aware that I'd changed the subject.
"Yeah. I think more people know who he is than know who you are. He's kind of a celebrity around these parts. He played ball too, didn't he?"
"Running back for the Cal Bears, appropriately enough."
His head nodded, maybe a little more than it should have.
"Both of you were good. What happened?"
"Vietnam." I looked back toward the house, my eyes unable to leave it alone.
"Do you think anybody's made any connections?"
"Well, nobody's said anything, but you've got 'em nervous."
He shook his head.
"What the hell are you doing out here, Walt?"
I plucked the .30-30 from its resting place and examined the breech. It was loaded, after all. I held it and looked at him.
"You know, I thought you might have some other reasons for bringing me out here."
It took a long time for him to respond, but when he did, he looked confused and then just a little shocked.
"Me?"
We both looked at the Winchester. I bring that thing with me everywhere I go anymore. With all the things going on out here, I figure a man ought to have some protection.
I walked back through the gate and leaned on the grill guard of his truck. Who else has a red Dodge like yours? He sat there looking at me blankly. Your new truck, anybody else have one like it?
No, I don't think so.
When did you put the plates on? He thought about it.
This morning.
I got them in the mail yesterday. Anybody else use your truck?
No.
Then he reconsidered.
I let Herschel use it to haul some of the equipment over for the auction, but that's it.
I thought about last night when I'd carried the cowboy home. Were you driving out on the Barton Road by the corrals last night? He laughed.
That was you that brought Herschel back?
He laughed again.
I always make a loop to make sure he gets to his trailer all right.
He shook his head.
I was on my way home.
When I saw your truck at the corrals, it passed me, then headed south and east. It was silent for a bit. We both knew his place was north and west. He sniffed and covered his face with a hand.
I sometimes take Barton down to Middle Prong and then circle back on Wild Horse, just cruising.
He slid the palm of his hand down and rested his chin.
You'd be amazed at the things you'll do if you think you're never going to see a place again.
I looked over my shoulder and could see someone on horseback on the road leading up to and alongside the cliffs.
How about at the bar?
When?
Afterward.
He sounded honestly confused.
Like I told you, I went home and hung my keys by the door like I always do.
So you weren't at the bar in Absalom at about 1:30 this morning?
Hell no! Like I said, I was at home asleep. I was in bed by midnight, I can guarantee it.
He fished in his shirt pocket, pulled out a plastic medicine vial, and rattled the contents.
Took two of these. Boom, boom, out go the lights.
I held out a hand, and he threw me the bottle. I read the paper label and looked up at him.
Where did you get Mary Barsad's medications?
He studied me.
It's not what you think.
I didn't say anything.
It's not.
He started to reach for the container, but I tightened my hand around it. His hand dropped.
She gave them to me. I was having trouble sleeping, and she thought they might help.
Did they?
Like a pole-axed steer.
I waited.
We were just friends, that's all.
He watched me, trying to gauge my reaction.
I'd see her out riding, and we'd talk. Pretty soon she'd stop by and have a cup of coffee. We got to talking, and if I was to tell you the truth, I think she felt sorry for me. And shit, Walt, I let her.
Then I take it that you knew her pretty well. He nodded.
Do you think she shot Wade?
He took a deep breath.
God, I don't know.
He slipped off the fence, stretched his muscles, and walked toward the middle of the road, with his palms at the small of his back. He spoke to the cliff.
I'd like to think that she didn't do it, but she says she did, so what the hell do you think?
I decided to keep a few hold cards where they belonged.
I'm not sure. I mean, they found her with the gun.
I knew the story. I'd heard it from Herschel and had read it in the Campbell County reports, but I figured I'd play along.
Who did? Well, Herschel. Then he came and got me.
Did he bring her?
Nope, left her sitting there in the yard. But he took the gun and came and got me.
He left her sitting in the yard with the house burning? He turned to look at me. His voice was strained and was carried away by the wind.
Only the barn was burning when he came to get me, but by the time we got back over, the house had gone up too. We found her sitting right where he'd left her.
Herschel didn't go in before and check on Wade to see if he was dead?
Yeah, now that I think about it,
maybe he did. He shook his head.
I couldn't have done it.
I tossed the container of pills in the air, caught it, and held it up between us.
In the kitchen, you mentioned something about Mary, something you wanted to show me. Was it this?
He nodded and smiled.
Yeah, I figured it was the only guaranteed way to get you to come along with me.
I nodded. Dog had been sitting on my foot but raised his head to look at me when he noticed that the rider, who had a small child seated with him on the horse, was only 100 yards off. I looked at the mounted young man in the cowboy hat. Tom Groenberg, to whom I leased the place, and the 2-year-old boy who was sharing his saddle both recognized me and began waving.
"You mind if I hang on to these? Not if you think it'll help, but can I have 2 for the road?"
I walked over, popped the cap, and tapped 2 of the white oblong pills, imprinted with S-421, into his open palm.
"You never know when you might have a rough night."
"Or a rough day. Boy, howdy." October 22nd, 6 days earlier, night. Her eyes had reflected the streetlights that shone through Virgil's window. She never seemed to really sleep, and I had begun to think she should try it standing up, like a horse. I stood, but she didn't move, so I quietly patted my leg for Dog to follow. We slipped back into the main hallway and walked toward Vic's office, where I could hear her softly tapping her keyboard. Her office was small, with the Wyoming law binders covering the walls, but she liked it crowded. Her legs were stretched out with her naked feet crossed at the ankles on the edge of her desk, the keyboard in her lap. Dog settled on the floor, his big head between his paws, and I occupied the gray plastic chair.
"What's the word, Thunderbird?"
She waved for me to hold on a second, continued typing an email message, and pressed send. She mumbled in response to my question,
"What's the price, 44 twice? What's the joy, nature boy? What's the reason? Grapes are in season."
She turned and sighed. An undersheriff's work is never done.
"The toxicologist in Cheyenne is flirting with me."
"On state time?"
She shrugged an eyebrow. "Hey, I get it where I can."
I ignored the comment.
"I thought Sizer Vittoria was going to research this,"
she interrupted.
"I sent him home.
Medication."
"No thanks, I've got plenty."
She stared at me as I waited, finally glancing up at the ceiling and reciting,
"Azoplicone is a non-benzodiazepine, non-imidazopyridine, cyclopyrrolone hypnotic sedative. The stuff was developed in the 80s, refined and tested in the 90s, and is now a widely available prescription drug."
She placed the keyboard back on her desk, but kept her shapely ankles on display. Her boots and socks were on the floor by the wastebasket. It was a warm night, so she had taken them off, which revealed her perfectly pedicured feet. She had rolled up her jeans to make Wyoming culottes, something she did a lot in the summertime. I guessed this wardrobe decision was her swan song, and her muscled calves showed to perfect advantage. "It works by binding to the GABA receptors in the brain, but beyond that connection, they're really not sure how the stuff works." She glanced at the computer screen, hit another button, and the drug company's logo and active screen commercial came up. Vic knocked the syrupy music down and looked at me.
"Most of these hypnotic and sedative drugs are still a mystery to the companies that produce them, all for people with chronic insomnia like your friend back there."
"So the pills are legit?"
She nodded.
"DCI ran every test they had, and guess what?"
I waited.
"They're sleeping pills."
She glanced back at the computer screen as a couple frolicked on a beach at sunset.
"The only effect that most people notice is a bitter metallic taste in the mouth called dysgeusia."
She considered me with her head slightly cocked.
"Do you believe they have a fucking scientific term for bitter metallic taste?"
I nodded. "We used to just call it fear."
5 to 10 minutes after dosing, you get the taste.
She threw a chin toward the computer screen.
10 to 15 minutes and you're out. REM sleep within the hour.
"Can you OD on it?"
"Oh, yeah. Anything more than about 36 milligrams and you're looking at an activated charcoal cocktail or the pump, and you're also likely looking at renal or liver damage. Then, depending on that damage, you go to Operation Bank Account."
"Which is?"
"Going through pockets for loose change."
I sighed.
There is one important note concerning our case, though, and that is that the medication is for temporary usage. She stared at me. Sleeping Beauty's been using this stuff for almost 2 years. Who knows how much of this crap is backed up in her system or what effect it has?
Illegal use?
There's a small niche in the drug culture of addicts that use the stuff since it's DEA Schedule 4 and easy to get. They use it for the come-down phase after cocaine, meth, LSD, MDMA, and all the upper drugs. ADD and ADHD patients use the stuff to come down after spending the day on amphetamine variants. She pointed at the screen as the happy actors collapsed in giant feather beds, surrounded by huge, sleepily floating butterflies hovering over them. All in all, it was kind of creepy. Do you believe this crap? I mean, if you're to the point of drugging yourself into a stupor to go to sleep at night, you're probably not leading an idyllic life.
An extra veneer usually works for me. I started to get up, but she swung her chair around, hooked the aforementioned naked calves behind my legs, and pulled herself in close, grasping my thighs with her capable hands.
I usually rely on hot, sweaty, jungle monkey sex. She leaned in, and our noses were about 8 inches apart. Works every time.
I didn't move. I hear that can be very addictive, too.
Her face grew closer, and her voice lowered to a rough whisper.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still thinking about going out to Absalom. She leaned in, even closer than before. You know, I think we're developing an unhealthy pattern here. Every time I talk about the job, you talk about sex. And every time I talk about sex, you talk about the job. I watched as the smile hollowed under her cheekbones and traced her grin.
Kind of a passive-aggressive thing.
I could feel her hands running up and down my thighs, building heat. I'm okay with either, and I have my own handcuffs.
I leaned back in my chair and broke the spell as she looked at me.
What?
I took a breath. I've got a question for you. A serious one.
Okay.
Do you want to be sheriff in 2 years?
She leaned back in her own chair and thought about it. This is a serious offer?
Yep.
She took a breath and studied me with a hard look. Why are you asking me this now?
It was a fair question, but I'd been giving the election considerable thought.
Well, the vote is next month, and up to now I've only put in a half-hearted attempt. She smiled at me with that oversized canine tooth. Seems to me you're giving everything a half-hearted attempt. She dropped her legs. What? You worried you're not going to get re-elected? It was my turn to take a breath.
We're not talking about me. I slowly let it out. We're talking about you.
Her eyes went down to her hands, which still held my knees. Look, I know my limitations.
What was that supposed to mean?
I'm not an administrator.
I shrugged. Neither am I. That's why I have Ruby.
I won't have that luxury because as soon as you retire, she'll leave skid marks. She looked around the room as if the staff had suddenly assembled and then departed. They'll all leave and I'll be sitting in this fucking mausoleum alone.
I think you might be underestimating yourself.
Really? Her head nodded in emphasis, the way it did when she had more to say than one mouth would allow. The Ferg is, for all intents and purposes, retired. Double Tough will bail as soon as one of these methane outfits offers him $60,000 a year. Freimeyer, the international man of mystery, who the fuck knows what Freimeyer is going to do? And Sizer Vittoria? You think he's going to be happy being a deputy for the rest of his life?
He just switched over from corrections. He's not ready to be a sheriff.
He will be in 2 years.
Maybe not.
I contemplated the books on her shelves and the one space left for the light switch, putting a little more distance between us. Does the Basco seem a little odd to you lately? Her head inclined. In what way?
Since he got stabbed?
She thought about it. Maybe a little. He's quieter. Why?
I've been trying to work him back on the duty roster, but he's not showing a great deal of enthusiasm.
She sighed. Well, he lost a kidney. So maybe he's got a right to a little bullet fever. She leaned back, cocked an elbow on her armrest, and placed a fingernail that matched her toes between her teeth. And you?
What about me?
I'm going back to the original subject of this fucking conversation. Are you going to be my deputy if I'm sheriff?
I leaned forward and took her finger out of her mouth and put my hands over hers. Like I said before, we're not talking about me, we're talking about you.
I asked you a very simple question.
I didn't answer. And she nodded some more.
That's what I thought.
October 28th, 7:25 p.m. Bill dropped Dog and me off at my rental car and said he'd see us later this evening at the fights. I drove the lonely gravel road back toward Absalom. A fantail of ochre dust plumed 20 feet tall behind me before it was lifted by the prevalent wind and carried off toward 20 Mile Butte and the battlement. The 200-foot front face of the topographical landmark stood like some sort of Powder River Monte Cassino along the wide valley of Wild Horse Creek, which reflected the autumnal glow as the scoria shone like carved platinum. When I was about Benjamin's age, I'd read Edgar Rice Burroughs' Lost World in the back bedroom of the ranch house we'd just been surveying, and had secretly suspected that dinosaurs roamed the elevated and unapproachable 20 square miles that I saw almost every day. I was right in a sense, but wrong in a chronology that was off by a couple of million years. The college in Sheridan had had a dig up on the butte where they had found the intact, fossilized skeleton of not a dinosaur but a bird-like creature about 8 feet tall. I'd seen the diatryma in the museum over there, and had dutifully read the little brass plaque that had labeled it as one of the dominant predators of the Eocene period, when Wyoming had been a dense jungle of subtropical climate at the edge of a western interior seaway. Geologically, I'm sure there was a lot that had gone on there since then, but socially, I don't think much had happened. There were the occasional antelope and plenty of modern birds that made their homes in the rock, but the plateau was too high and the wind too forceful to allow for cattle grazing. And there wasn't much to hunt, so not many people made the trip. There was a new road where an energy exploration firm had tested for gas and oil, and which might have provoked more exploration, but in keeping with the battlement's inhospitality, all of the 17,000-foot wells had come up empty. Secretly, I was glad. I still had hopes that there might be a few dinosaurs up there lingering about. Just outside of town, I pulled the rental car to a stop at the railroad crossing and watched a fully loaded Burlington, Northern, and Santa Fe coal train rumble over the dark, shiny rails that gleamed like quicksilver in the twilight. My mind matched the pace of the train, each thought snagging the next and hauling it in tow. I had explained to Tom Groenberg and his son Carter that we were just out for a ride and had taken the old ranch road by habit. He'd asked if I'd gotten this month's check, and I assured him that I had. He said that he and his wife, Jennifer, had purchased the property to the west and still had hopes of having a place of their own someday. I assured them that my place was theirs as long as they liked. I glanced back up the hill toward the cemetery and thought about two of the graves that were up there. I reached over and scratched Dog's ears as the last rail car passed and snaked its way in a gradual arc along Clear Creek south toward the Bighorn Mountains. Thomas Wolfe says you can't go home again. He watched me with his big, soulful eyes and then glanced back down the gravel road to the hills beyond, perhaps looking for his own long-dead ancestors. There was a great deal of bustle in the R in anticipation of the big fight, and I was hoping that Juana would be working so I could get Dog and me some dinner. It was as she'd said, and Pat had rehired her. Then, after giving her all the work, he had gone home to take a nap before this evening's festivities. She was loading auxiliary coolers behind the bar, and there were 16 more cases to carry in from the porch. I volunteered to stock the beer if she would grill up a few hamburgers for us.
The food was ready by the time I finished setting up the coolers, and she even allowed Dog to come in and sit at the end of the bar. She broke up his two hamburgers and started to carefully feed them to him. I guess her opinion of the species was softening.
He likes me.
I ate my one cheeseburger and suspected that it might have been a little larger than the R usually served.
So, you called the cops last night?
She fed another bite to Dog, and I could tell she was surprised at how gentle he was.
Yeah, even as an illegal, I figured that was too much gunfire to not call in. Anyway, I was incognito.
She glanced at me.
How come they arrested you?
I swallowed and took a sip of my iced tea.
They didn't. Why'd they put you in the cruiser?
I plucked a fry that had fallen from my plate onto the surface of the bar, dragged it through my puddle of ketchup, and gave it to Dog. Waste not, want not.
They just said they wanted to go over a few things.
She gestured a graceful chin toward the now boarded-up window.
Like who blew out the front of the bar?
I nodded. Things like that.
Pat's got a pretty wicked scuff on his chin, and he says his jaw isn't working so hot.
Really?
Yeah.
She continued to watch me as I ate.
He says that he was closing up and that somebody came in the back and surprised him.
I turned to look at her as she fed Dog another bite. Somebody was breaking in the back while somebody was shooting up the front?
That's what he said.
She shrugged with one shoulder and again with just a bit of attitude.
What do you think happened?
I had to smile at her 2-year textbook procedure.
I really wouldn't know. I found about 14 9-millimeter casings scattered all over the floor and a 20-gauge shell behind the bar